So we're going to talk about a few different topics under ethics. First, basic concepts. Then how conflicts arise and how to resolve them, followed by some discussion of the attorney-client privilege, and then ending on a few other related things that corporate counsel encounter. And during this, periodically, we're going to discuss examples where we present the types of ethical situations that you may be faced with, and then Christy will explain how to resolve them. All right, some basic concepts. It's in this situation, the Texas disciplinary rules, since we're in Texas, the Texas disciplinary rules of professional conduct apply to in-house counsel, just as to outside counsel. Problems often arise with conflicts and with privilege because of uncertainty as to the identities of the corporate counsel's client. What you're doing and not what your title is determines your role and your obligation. So if you're acting as a lawyer, then the rules apply. What your clients, of course, often don't understand your role with any degree of sophistication. We're going to get into that, the situations where individuals within your organizations inadvertently, through not unintentionally, begin to think that you represent them, not the company. Now, one thing that is clear under the rules is that in those situations, it's your responsibility to explain to those constituents, I don't represent you, I represent our company. Now, a couple of fundamental obligations that will lead up to an example. In the Texas Rules of Disciplinary Procedure 1.01, competent and diligent representation. The very basic concept is a lawyer shall not accept or continue employment in a legal matter which the lawyer knows or should know is beyond the lawyer's competence. And then B, in representing a client, a lawyer shall not neglect a legal matter entrusted to the lawyer. And so, you know, we all know these concepts and they seem so easy to comply with. But look at this. Look at this example. It's the end of the day on Friday when a demand letter arrives on your desk. You're late to get to a school event and have been working hard to clear your desk before the week-long trip that starts tomorrow. The letter threatens a large claim against the company and individual executives. Because you don't have to respond for a few weeks, you leave it to deal with when you return. Seems pretty straightforward. You know, there's no deadline coming up next week. It can wait. Here's the rub. While you are gone, executives and others delete and destroy key documents. Christy, what are your thoughts? Problem?
Yeah, we definitely have a problem. We've all been there where we've been there on a Friday and we're trying to get out to go to a school event or whatever it is. And then the next thing you know, you get hit with a letter like this. Unfortunately, you got to take action. You can't just sit on it for that, for the reason that is there, because what if people destroy documents unaware that this letter has come in? So got to get a litigation hold out as quickly as possible just to make sure that you protect against this. You don't have to do everything to address the letter, but the litigation hold is key.
So here the comment to Rule 1.01, you know, kind of lays it out. Having accepted employment, a lawyer should act with competence, commitment, and dedication to the interest of the client and with zeal and advocacy upon the client's behalf. And here's the hard part. A lawyer should feel a moral or professional obligation to pursue a matter on behalf of a client with reasonable diligence and promptness despite opposition, obstruction, or personal inconvenience to the lawyer. So what we sign on to in this is our client's interests come ahead of our own. Now, one of the issues, Christy points out that in that situation, you need to get the litigation hold in place immediately. Federal Rule of 37, paren E, creates a safe harbor under certain very narrow circumstances when documents are inadvertently deleted under a normal document retention policy. But as Tusi versus County of Suffolk points out, You to take advantage of that good faith exception, a party needs to act affirmatively to prevent the system, the IT system, from destroying or altering information. So you act fast and everything is going to be okay. All right. Next interesting example. Your CFO approaches you, maybe interesting. Your CFO approaches you and asks that you prepare documents papering payments to an agent in a remote foreign country. You discover that the payments are for extraordinary amounts to an entity about which you can find no records. You approach the CFO about the payments to ask whether they're legit, and the CFO explains, that's how everyone does business there. Just write the contract. I'll protect you. Christy, problem?
Yep. Once again, we have a problem. I actually think it's, to your second question, a pretty big problem. Not appropriate, and you're going to have to push back. And I see all kinds of issues here with FCPA and otherwise. And this is the kind of line in the sand, unfortunately, you have to draw.
And this is an example of where it can become difficult in managing the expectations of your constituents. Certainly, the CFO is one of the senior officers of the company. Thinks in some degree that you represent, or that they can direct you, that your duty of loyalty is to them. And part of the issue here is to remember who your client is, which is the company.